Morning. Good Erev Shabbos. So today's daf is Samech Hey. We are on the bottom of Samech Dalad Amud Beis. As advertised, I'm going to go through a little bit more of the Tosos this morning. The Tosos deals with a very basic issue. We're nearing the end of the sixth parak. It's about a 10-blot adventure. And just a couple more days to go. We have Shabbos and then we have Sunday. And we are then going to start Klal Gadol. Klal Gadol, we begin on Monday. Anyway, so and over the course of the sixth parak, what we've learned is that the Chachamim were gozer on women not to go out with jewelry on Shabbos. And the reason why, as we explained from the beginning of the parak, is threefold. The number one, some articles of jewelry a woman's going to show off to her friend. Number two, some articles of clothing, specifically ties that she wraps into her hair has to be removed before she goes to the mikvah. She may end up carrying that. Or number three, she may be makpid on certain items, and so therefore she's going to take it off. So for three possible reasons, a chachamim goes there and said that women cannot go with jewelry on Shabbos. Additionally, we've learned, not only can she not go into the Rishus HaRabim with these articles of clothing, but she can't even go into her chatzar as well. And there is an opinion in the Gemara, espoused by Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yishmael, which then in turn is adopted, I'm sorry, Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, which then is in turn adopted by the Amor Rabbi Anane, by Rabbi Sasson. And he says that all these articles of jewelry she can't wear into the Rishus HaRabim, but she can wear into a chatzar. Tosa starts off by asking the most fundamental question, basic question, which is that if you look around, you find that all of our women wear jewelry on Shabbos. Rings and earrings and nose rings and, okay, maybe not nose rings, but what did the Gemara say about nose? No, nose rings was in the Gzeira and earrings were not in the Gzeira. Mm-hmm. Okay, but rings on the finger and necklaces and so how is it, asks Tosa, that our women walk around with jewelry on Shabbos? So first of all, Tosfos points out Venir Dalachik Rabbi Anane. I'm going back to Tosfos. I'm starting today on the Tosfos. It's the last Tosfos on Samech Dalam and Bay. So first of all, Tosfos says that he believes that the halacha is like Rabbi Anane because, well, the Gemara Tosfos is going to explain Medamra Milsa Mishmei to Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yishmael Tanu Hu Palik. So first of all, it's supported by Tana. Okay, the Ode. The Bishosh so from Halacha Achar Meikel, and also this is a machlokus on a din de rabbanan carrying. We're not carrying in the Rishus HaRabim. It's a fear that you may carry in the Rishus HaRabim. So this is a din de rabbanan. It's a gzera de rabbanan. We have a machlokus. So therefore, Tosa says we're entitled to be Meikel. So therefore, good. You're allowed to go into the chatzar. Hainu afilu bechatzar she'inu meravis. And furthermore, Tosa argues is that when we say that a woman's allowed to go out with jewelry into her chatzar, it means even if the chatzar doesn't have an eruv. You know, you're not allowed to carry in a chatzar without an eruv, although that's an issur de rabbanan. But when when the allowance is given over here by Rabbi Anani to carry into a chatzar, he must mean a chatzar that is not. Does not have an eruv around it. The bechatzar merav is like a shem chiddush, right? Because if we're talking about a regular chatzar that has an eruv, I mean that's obvious. So ella is shem chiddush imke nashim utars liskashay bebayis bechatzar betabas betachshitin. So step number one of Tosfos is that a woman can go around her house in her chatzar with tabas betachshit with jewelry. The Anu, and then Tosfos further argues, She'in lanu Rishus HaRabim Gamor, looks at Tosfos, we don't even have a Rishus HaRabim nowadays. Yeah, you can...
He's not here.
You can fill up the front. So the... hard shoes to fill. So the Anu, She'in lanu Rishus HaRabim Gamor, and we don't have a Rishus HaRabim nowadays. The Chol Rishus HaRabim Shalanu Karmel is She'in Mavo Shalanu Rechavot Yud Vavama. Because you know, right, this is Tosos Lashita, so we've seen Tosos espouse this opinion before. In order for an area to qualify as a Rishus HaRabim, first of all, it has to be dimensionally 16 amas wide. The street that runs through the city has to be 16 amas wide. Kind of like Palmetto Park Road, but let me not make this too personal. And Veloshish and Riboy, Bok and Bo. And furthermore, you need 600,000 people walking through the street on any given day. So he says, so we don't have a Rishus HaRabim. Hareyu kechatzar sheinu merevus umutaras nashen shalom liskashi betabas v'tachshitin kipirish rabbeinu tam. And so therefore Tosfos makes the argument, well, since we don't have a Rishus HaRabim, so now it would be totally permissible for women to go out wearing jewelry, since anyway we don't have a Rishus HaRabim.
Robert, why do you mention 600,000? I don't understand.
Wait, do me a favor. Yeah, you can ask me after. Just wait. V'hikshari dafilu yirishut haram shalanu chashiv kekarmelis heichisharu. Now, kemo chater. And then the Riz bothered by this, because the Riz says, look, I understand what Rabbeinu Tam's basic argument is that we don't have a Rishus Rabim, and therefore she can go out. But even when we said that she can go out, when all said and done, she can go out to the Chatzar. And the Chatzar, that doesn't have an Eruv, but that's still a Chatzar, meaning that's still a private area. It's Rishus HaYachin. In fact, we're going to learn later on, when we're talking about saving from the fire, you're going to hear that again and again this morning, right? In other words, the fire breaks down your house, and the Chachamim allowed you to save certain things from your house. Kisvei HaKodesh, food, clothing, okay? But in other words, you can't put out the fire, but there are certain things that you can take out. But even when you take it out, you can only take it out to a chatzar. And the only heter that the Chachamim gave is that you can take it out to a chatzar that doesn't have an Eruv. But you can't take it out to a Karmelis. So now, the Riz says to Rabbeinu Tam, look, I understand your basic point, that women can go out with jewelry into a chatzar, but what our women are doing is they're taking it out beyond the point of a chatzar, they're taking it out to the Carmelis. V'omer Rabbeinu Baruch kevin deleduha v'lu reshus harabim gemura, lo medam Carmelis v'chatzar she'en amarevis v'asrin and Carmelis mishum reshus harabim. Aval anu she'en lanu reshus harabim klal, ein lahachmer be'Carmelis kol kach. So, Tosos invokes another argument. Okay, this is a lot of svaras being thrown around this Tosfos. So I know I'm throwing out a lot of information very quickly, but Tosfos throws out another argument, which is that a Carmelis is only going to be an issue when there is a bona fide Rishus Rabim around. But if there's no bona fide Rishus Rabim, so therefore we can even be further makel, even in the area of a Carmelis. And again, by makel in this context, we mean being makel so that women can wear jewelry into a Carmelis on Shabbos, obviously. We're not talking about carrying anything in a Carmelis, but just simply the idea of wearing jewelry in a Carmelis. Chen Kasev Avrab, Reb Shimon Matzah Kasev Be Shem Rabbeinu Sar HaShalom. The Davish Regilas Arazulazu Astro Kishen Regilas Mutaris. Another argument employed by Tosos is that, look, the issue over here is they're going to show it off to one another. And look, in the good old days, says Tosos, this is Tosos talking about the good old days. In the good old days, so wearing jewelry was exciting. In other words, and when a woman has an article of jewelry, it's so exciting, it's so unusual. Here, look what I got. But nowadays, says Tosfos, nowadays, 13th century. Nowadays, all of our women go out with jewelry. It's so regular, it's so custom. Okay, so nowadays, perhaps it would be mutter, which obviously touches on issues of if there's a gzera derabanan, even if the reason of the gzera derabanan is no longer enforced, but can we now make the argument that because the reason no longer applies, so therefore the gzera no longer applies? Delicate issue, understood. But Tosas obviously is invoking that argument. And finally, you see kind of like a concession, like a white flag of Tosfos, and says, look, right, correct, meaning they're going to do it, so now what? Now we're going to make a big stink? They're going to do it, and Mutav Shiyu Shogim Vayu Mizidim. So, in other words, you kind of lose sight in this Tosfos, whether it's halachically legitimized or it's just, look, we understand. That's just how it's going to be. All right, it's a very interesting Tosfos, very interesting topic in general. We go back to the Gemara. We are in the Gemara. V'rav Maishna Hani. Okay, right. Pick it up about 10 lines from the bottom of the Amud. So we just pointed out some machlokas whether a woman can go out with jewelry into the chatzir. So machlokas between our Mishnah versus Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi, and good. V'rav Maishna Hani. Now, according to Rav, right? Rav's position is that a woman can only go out into her chatzir wearing only the kavul and the peh nachris, but that's it. Meaning, no other jewelry, according to Rav, can be worn into the chatzir. So, why did the Chachamim allow a heter for these items? Amar Ula, Kadesh lo tizkana al ba'ala. We don't want a woman to become unpleasant, unattractive to her husband. So in other words, there are certain things that the Chachamim allowed a woman to adorn, even in a chatzer, just so simply that she'll be somewhat attractive to her husband. When a woman's a nida, so the original zikanim said, When a woman's a nida, she should put no makeup on. She should not wear any color clothing, meaning she should really be totally unattractive to her husband during her yemei nida. Achbar Rabbi Akiva Velime, now Rabbi Akiva comes along and he says, in Cain, Atamigana Bala, Vinimsa Bala Migarsha. And Rabbi Akiva says, that's not good, because then she'll become unattractive to her husband and her husband will be Megarisha. Now, I'm sure, now take it back, I'm not sure, but I strongly suspect that Rabbi Akiva over here is consistent with his position at the end of Masechta Gittin. You remember the last discussion of Masechta Gittin, and if you don't, we'll get to it shortly enough, short 3 years from now. So the end of Masechta Gittin, the Gemara has a debate in terms of what's grounds for divorce, right? So it's the three-way machlokas, if I remember correctly, and Rabbi Akiva takes the most, I guess you can argue it's whether lenient or strict, but takes the most extreme position, which is that if she burns dinner, that's grounds for divorce. Okay, so again, which is fascinating because you know how Rabbi Akiva, his relationship with his wife was a very special relationship. So, but that's Rabbi Akiva's position, the end of Gittin. So you can, you know, in that context, you could certainly hear over here Rabbi Akiva arguing and saying, look, in other words, she comes out to be unattractive and that's, you know, that can easily be grounds for divorce. So in other words, v'hadava b'nidasa just simply means that she will remain a nida until she goes into the mikvah. Meaning, don't argue that the pasuk, this is Rabbi Akiva talking, don't argue that the pasuk here is talking about that she has to be like in the state of nidui, where she's excommunicated and during her yemei nida, she's really to be put into an isolated area where no makeup. In other words, that's not how to understand the pasuk. The pasuk is just simply telling us that a woman is a nida and will continue to be a nida until she tovels in the mikvah. That's all the pasuk is telling us. And so therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, what do you see? That the Chachamim made allowances for a woman to look attractive to her husband. Similarly over here, now I know there are two different issues. That's an issue of nida to her husband. Here's an issue of how a woman's to dress on Shabbos. But using the same idea and the same model of thinking, so what Rabbi Akiva's, what the Gemara's arguing over here is, that's the svara behind Rav, that a woman's allowed to wear these items so that a woman will not be unattractive to her husband. Period. Ad kan. That's the end of this discussion. By the way, can a woman wear a shetel? So I'm not discussing it now. It's not. This is not the time and place for that discussion. But it sounds like from our Gemara that a woman is allowed to wear a shetel. In fact, one of the things that our Mishnah says that a woman can wear on Shabbos is a peah nachris, which, you know, it's a false piece of hair. It's a wig. It's a shetel. So there is a major debate amongst, it starts with the Rishonim, goes well into the Achronim, in terms of whether a woman can wear a shetel. How does this not become strong evidence? So first of all, if you've gone through the Gemara carefully and you read the Gemara carefully, the only allowance for a woman to wear her shetel, her peah nachris, is only into the chatzer. Right. So in other words, and not beyond that point, meaning after the chatzer, you understand, is an enclosed area. Chatzer is, meaning you're on your property, but it's more than just being on your property. There's a wall around your property. No one can see you when you're in your chatzer. It's still a private area. So the counter-argument is very simple, meaning that the heter is only for her to wear in her chatzer. A chatzer is kind of like her house. But outside the chatzer, you can't wear the peinachris, so you can't, in other words, our Mishnah may probably is not a referendum as to whether or not a woman is allowed to wear shetel.
You would have played that she would take it off and carry it. I mean, that's what, she's not going to show it.
Right. In other words,
so maybe that's why.
Well, also probably, I mean, again, there's a lot of conjecture on my part, but probably the shetel that's being described over here is worn on top of something. Probably. The Gemara over here has an interesting debate now. Look, we have this issue of Marasayin. It comes up time and again throughout Shas. We just discussed it back in the fifth parak of Shas, where we talked about the animal not going out with a bell on Shabbos, even if there's no clapper on the bell. And the reason why you can't go out with the animal, can go out on Shabbos, is because it looks like you're going to the marketplace, and that's an issue of Marasayin. Marasayin, you have to look religious, meaning not just be religious, but you got to look religious, right? That's exactly what Marasayin is. So the Gemara now has a discussion as to, look, there's this issue of Marasayin. And obviously Marasayin is an issue of appearance. But appearance only becomes an issue when you're outside, when you're in the public, when you're in public view. So Rav makes a rule, which is, anytime that the Chachamim asked Maris Ayin, they asked it not only in public areas, but in private areas as well. Okay, so there's a general idea. Maris Ayin is an Issa D'Oraisa, an Issa D'Rabbanan, right? Oh, exactly. So in other words, this is a discussion in of itself. But however the concept, whatever level the concept is on, what Rav is arguing is that once the Chachamim labeled an issue, a Marasayan issue, so then the label goes even when there's no reason to worry about appearance. Meaning you're in the privacy of your own home. No one's going to see you. It doesn't matter. Marasayan still becomes an issue in the privacy of your own home as well. This is a rule given to us by Rav. Tanan. And to this rule, the Gemara points out, I don't know if you're right, says the Gemara to Rav, because we learned earlier, going back to the fifth parak of Shabbos, that an animal cannot go out with a bell on Shabbos, even if the clapper has been removed. Vitanya idach, and we learned in another brisa, pokek lagzug b'tzavra umitayel ima b'chatzir, that the animal can take the clapper off of its bell and walk around with the bell on, only in the chatzir. That's better. Only in the chatzir. So, what do you see over here? That even though the bell around the neck of the animal is a marasayan issue, in public it's an issue. In private, it's fine. So you see that we have now cited two brisos, and it does not seem that Rav is correct. The Gemara to this says Tanaihi. This is subject to a machlokas Tanaim. Rav's rule that Marasai not only applies in out in the street but applies in private as well is a debate amongst the Tanaim. The Tanya Valent and Bryce were now on the top of Samechem and Aleph. Shochtim Mechama Veloka Negeda Am, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon, Osrim. Your clothing got wet on Shabbos. You just went through a terrible rainstorm on Shabbos, and now your clothing is dripping. And so now, can I put it on what's that thing called? The clothing line. Thank you. I can't even blame how early it is. It's not an issue of early. It's just an issue of my brain. You can't even put it on the clothing line on Shabbos. Now, the Tanakhama says that you can put it on the clothing line, right, so that the sun will dry it, but don't do it in public. Meaning, if your clothing line is in public view, you cannot do it. If it's in the privacy of your own chatzir, so then you can do it. Now, what's the issue over here? Drying clothing on Shabbos is an issue? No. The issue is that when somebody sees your clothing on the clothing line, the appearance is you did laundry on Shabbos. Now, even if you didn't do it, and let's assume you didn't do it, right? Even if you didn't do it, but that's Marasayan. That's an issue of Marasayan. So you see that according to the Tanakhama, Marasayan is an issue in public, but not in private. And Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon Osrim, and Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon says that it is Osir, it's prohibited, both in public and in private. So now what do you get from this? You get from this that subject to Machlokas Tanayim, whether or not Marasayan applies in public and in private, or just in public and not in private. And now that would mean, going back to the beginning of this discussion, Rav Yehuda Merav, who says that Marasayan is an issue both in public and in private, is going to be in agreement with Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Shimon. Who does the halacha follow like? I know Hadi's not here, but I still have to talk about it. So who does the halacha follow like? So take a look at the Tosfos on the top of Samechem and Aleph, where Tosfos debates who the halacha follows like, as the Gemara himself does not commit to either position. Okay. Uvamoch Sheba Azna. Okay, going back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah talks about what a woman is allowed to walk out with on Shabbos, and our Mishnah says that a woman can go out on Shabbos with a wad of cotton in her ear. Right, Rashi in the Mishnah, back in the Mishnah, explained that let's say her ear is oozing, wax or whatever's coming out of the ear, and she wants to put a cloth in her ear, a wad in her ear in order to stuff it up. So the Mishnah says she may, as well as Moksha Shabbatantala, she's got a wound on her foot, and she wants to put something on her foot. The Mishnah said she may. And Moshe, Kinalan Yidasan, also a sanitary napkin. Sanitary napkin also could be worn by a woman on Shabbos, and even into a Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. And on all three of these points now, the Gemara is going to qualify. It's not enough plenty of good seats still available. It's not enough that she has a wad in her ear, but it also has to be tied into her ear as well. Now, it's going to be a little bit tricky to strap it onto her ear, but in other words, it has to be secured into her ear. Why does it have to be secured into her ear? Because the concern is, it's going to fall out, she's going to pick it up, and walk for Amos and Rosh Hashanah, so therefore it's got to be secured in her ear. Same thing regarding the moch of her foot. Moch of her foot. So she's got a wound on her foot. She wants to stuff up the wound. So again, it's got to be tied onto her foot. It's not sufficient for just the wad to be attached to her foot.
Or prior to Shabbos.
Presumably she could tie it on Shabbos as well. And the Gemara says, now Rami Bar Yecheskel so far twice has said it's got to be tied in. So now to the Gemara discussing the wad for her nida, also Savar. Now he thought it's got to be the same halach. It's got to be tied in. So Amar Rava Afa Pishena Kashala, and Rava says no. And this Rava says it does not have to be tied in. Why? Kevin Demais Loasi Lusuya. Because let's say it falls out. So it's disgusting. Understood? It's self evident. It's disgusting. So the whole reason why the Chachamim made Gzera, and the whole reason why Rami Berechesko kept saying it has to be tied in, it has to be tied in, is because if it falls out, so she'll be tempted to pick it up and carry it. Here, by the Moksha Benida, if it falls out, she's not going to pick it up, she's not going to carry it. Now, what if there's a handle to any one of these items? Now, Rashi says, to be fair, Rashi says we're talking about the third item of this list, the Moksha Benida. Meaning, so now that it has a handle, so that means then that if it falls out, she would be tempted to pick it up and carry it, because she wouldn't have to be actually touching the wad itself. She'd be touching the handle of the wad. So Amalei Mutter says to that it would be Mutter, it's fine. Id Manami Amar Rav Nachman Bar Oshia Amar Rav Yochanan Asala Beis Yad Mutter. The Gemara quotes this in the name of Rav Nachman Bar Oshia and the name of Rav Yochanan. That's Mutter. Rav Yochanan Nafu Behula Beis Medrasha. Now Rav Yochanan would go out with it to the Beis Medrash. Now, obviously, we're not talking about Moksha Benida. We're talking about Rabbi Yochanan. So what are we talking about? So Rashi says, we're talking about Moksha Ba'azno. Apparently, Rabbi Yochanan had some oozing out of his ear. So he stuck it in. And he put it into his ear. And he did this, and it was controversial, says the Gemara. V'chalukin alav chaverav. And why was it controversial? Because he didn't fasten it and secure it to his ear. Meaning, Rami Bar Yecheskel says that if you want to have wad in your ear, wad of stuffing in your ear, it's got to be tied in. And Rav Yochanan went to the Beis Medrash and he had a wad in his ear, but it wasn't tied in. And the Gemara says to that it was controversial. Rabbi Yanai Nafik Behula Karmelitz V'chalukin Alav Kol Daro. Rabbi Yanai walked out into a Karmelitz with some stuffing in his ear, and his entire generation, that's super controversial. His entire generation said, no, you can't do that. You have to tie it in. And to that the Gemara says, didn't we learn just a couple of minutes ago that it has to be tied in? So the Gemara says that in defense of Rav Yanai, it depends whether it was secure or whether it was not secure. Meaning, take a look at Rashi. Rashi offers two explanations over here. I'm going to read Rashi's first explanation. In other words, Rav Yochanan took the wad of Khan in his ear, so he put a lot into his ear, and it was really tight in his ear. And therefore, it didn't need to be tied in. And Rami Bar Yecheskel, who says it has to be tied in, is talking about where you're not stuffing it into your ear, you're putting a little bit into your ear, and so there, we're worried it's going to fall out, and you're going to pick it up, then it has to be tied, and it has to be secured next to your ear. That's Rashi's first pshat. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi offers another pshat. We go on in the Gemara. Why is a woman having a peppercorn in her mouth? So the Gemara says because she's got bad breath. And apparently back in the good old days, having the peppercorn in your mouth will combat the bad breath. And the fascinating part about it is that that's not considered carrying on Shabbos. That's considered her tachshit, it's considered like an adornment for the woman, and that would be fine for her on Shabbos. And Gilgamelch, why is she putting a wad of salt in her mouth? So the Gemara says, because it alleviates the pain of a toothache. Refuah. And again, somehow, this does not violate the Isser of Refuah, and you need some sort of explanation, which I don't have. But no, it's not. It, not necessarily. Meaning, most of our perek is talking in the context of women, but this particular psak is not. It's not talking about women.
Same thing with the
yeah. Right. Agreed. Okay. Back to the Gemara. Anything she can put anything in her mouth that'll combat the bad breath. Zangbala ginger, inami dartsuna cinnamon. Okay, now going back to the Mishnah, you remember Rashi offered two pshatim over here. I'll stick with Rashi's first pshat in the Mishnah, and that this is one issue. She is missing a tooth. So dentistry back in the good old days, not much has changed. So in other words, a little bit of bridge work. But the bridge work over here is she takes a piece of gold, shapes it like a tooth, and inserts it into the missing area. So the Mishnah says, brings down a machlokas, whether or not a woman can go out with her false gold tooth. Rebbe says it's mutter, and the Chachamim say it's aser. Okay? That's our Mishnah. Amar Rebbe Zera lo shanu elo shel zahav avash b'shel kesef, devre hakol mutter. So Rebbe Zera makes the following distinction. What is the tooth made out of? So if it's made out of gold, so as we learned back in our Mishnah, it's a machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim. But if it's made out of silver, says Rebbe Zera, divrei hakol, according to everybody, it's fine. Why? So take a look at Rashi over here once again. Rashi offers two pshatim. Rashi over here is quoting his Rebbeim a lot over these past couple days. And Rashi, you see Rashi occupies a lot of real estate on the daf. It's because Rashi takes the time to offer his Rebbeim's pshat and to go to work on his Rebbeim's pshat. Not always in agreement with his Rebbeim. But anyway, Rashi over here says, the Shidoma L'Shar HaShinai, meaning, let's go back, silver is fine. If the falsetto tooth is made out of silver, it's fine. Shidoma L'Shar HaShinai, Divrei HaKol Mutter L'Shar Rabosai. So first he quotes his Rebbeim, and his Rebbeim say, well, because the silver tooth looks like her other teeth. Now, you're right. It's a little difficult, this pshat, but I get the basic idea, right? Silver is a cleaner color. It's a more enamel-type color. Okay? I know. It's hard to say it, hard to hear it, but that's what his Rebbeim are saying. And so, therefore, what's going to happen is that no one's going to point it out and say, hey, look at that. Look at your tooth. Because it looks more like her other teeth as opposed to gold, where gold really stands out. And so, therefore, people are going to point to her and they're going to say to her, what are you doing with that golden tooth?
Silver tarnishes actually pretty fast.
Okay. I know this because, Baruch Hashem, the menorah from last year, which we just took out in preparation for Hanukkah, wow, it needs work. Velinira, time d'shel zahav mishum d'chashiva v'asilach voye. And Rashi says, no, I don't think that's the pshat. I think the pshat goes like this. Meaning, the gold tooth is worn with pride, says Rashi. And what's going to happen is that she's got a gold tooth, and she's going to be walking in the street, and she's going to go to her friend and say, look.
Yeah, but she's not going to take it off, though.
Rashi says she will.
Gold.
Look what I got. And she reaches into her mouth, and she pulls out the tooth, and she says, look at this. But when it comes to silver, no reason to really show it off. Okay, so there's a Rashi over here offers two explanations in terms of what the difference is between silver and gold. Either it's an issue of ridicule and embarrassment, that's his Rebbeim's pshat, or Rashi's own personal pshat, which this is the one he prefers, is that the gold is something where she's more apt to show off. Continue in Rashi on your own, please, where Rashi really goes to work on his Rebbeim's pshat. He does not like it, for reasons that you'll see as you go on in Rashi. Meanwhile, however, let's go back to the Gemara.
I'm sure it wasn't really a tooth like a dentist would implant. It was mostly a cover of the tooth. So
I agree.
The more gold teeth you have, the richer you are.
Yeah, right. That's Rashi. That's what Rashi's arguing. So the Amar Abayi, I'm sorry. Lo shanu alo shel zav b'shav b'shal kesef divrei kol moter. Tanya na me'achi b'shal kesef divrei kol moter. Shel zahav rabbi matir v'chacham ma'osrim. Good. And the Gemara quotes a brisa which supports exactly this distinction of Rabbi Zera. Perfect. Amar Abayi, Rabbi Zera, Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Lazar, kulo sfir lahu. Now I told you this before, and I'm sticking to this. Abaye does this often, where he strings together Tanaim, meaning he likes to find a particular shita, and what he does is he looks for the Tanaim who all are in agreement to this shita. And it's Abaye who was invested in this operation, and I point it out every time because now I see, you know, page after page of Gemara, you just get a feel for it. Not because I'm smart, just because, you know, it starts to sink in. Amar Abaye. So, three Tanaim, Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, they all hold to the same basic idea. The Chomidi de Migne Bay, Lo Asi La Achvuye. Something that people in general would be embarrassed about, they're not going to show it off. So, Rabbi had the Amara. Now, Rabbi, we saw already in our Mishnah. Meaning, Rabbi says that a woman's got a gold tooth, she's not going to show it off because then she's going to be embarrassed. Having to show the absence of tooth in her mouth, she's not going to show it off. Rabbi Eliezer, Ditanya, Rabbi Lazar, Porta, Bekovelis, Vitzlucha, Shal, Platon. Rabbi Eliezer says that a woman is allowed. Now, I know it sounds like over here it's Potter, meaning Potter of Al-Asr. But you remember the Gemara that we did a couple days ago? Rabbi Eliezer said it was beyond Potter. It was Mutter Lagamre. That if a woman has her fragrance pouch that she wears around her neck, and the reason why she has it is because she smells bad. So Rabbi Eliezer says a woman is allowed to go out with it on Shabbos, even into a Rosh Hashanah. And the reason, as we explained earlier in the Gemara, is that typically who wears the fragrance pouch? Women who have a bad body odor. And so therefore, she will not take it off. She's embarrassed to take it off, therefore she will not take it off. And finally, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Ditanya, Klal Amar, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Kol Shuhu Lamata Min HaSvacha, Yotze Ba, Lamala Min HaSvacha, Eina Yotze Ba. The woman had the Svacha. That was the tichel of the day. Right? That's what women back then used to cover her hair. Now, she would put things underneath it, and she would put things on top of it. Meaning, that wasn't the only covering that she had on her head. She had additional coverings. We learned earlier, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, anything underneath the svacha is fine. Because she's not going to take off her svacha. Taking off her svacha would mean that she'd be showing her hair to people. She wouldn't do that. So anything placed under the svacha, that would be fine. Anything placed over the svacha, well, that's going to be an issue because she may take it off and she may show it to people. So, again, it's the same basic idea. Abaye strings together the three Tanayim, that anytime a woman's embarrassed to take something off, she won't, and so therefore she's allowed to go out with it even into a Rosh Hashanah. We are up to the next Mishnah. Yotza B'Sela She'al Hatzinis. What tzinis is? I'm not really sure. A wound, a wart, whatever. Some malady on her foot. So, what they used to do is they used to press a coin against this wound, fasten the coin in that area, and that coin was therapeutic. It was medicinal. And if you had the coin on the wound, on your foot, on Shabbos, the Mishnah says it's fine. You're allowed to walk out with it into your chaser, into your Rosh Hashanah.
You use silver dye cream, not it.
Right, correct. Right, very good. It was. The Gemara is going to point this out. It was the metal content. It was the silver. It was the fact that it was hard. It was a hard metal pressed against the wound. Okay, Gemara will treat us to a little bit of medicine. Habanus ketanus yotzes bechutin. Young girls can go out with strings. The minhag back in those days was that the girls would pierce their ears, but at a young age they wouldn't wear earrings. But you pierce an ear and you don't put something in it, so it's going to close up. So what the minhag was back then is that they would get their ears pierced at a young age, and they would put strings in the holes, in the piercings, in order so that the hole does not close up. And then later, when they get older, then they would wear earrings.
Still do that.
Okay, that was the minhag.
Still do that. They still do that.
I believe you. Yeah? The afilu bikismin sheba aznehem. And even if it's just a little twig, a little piece of wood, which doesn't sound that safe, but okay, leave my editorial out of this discussion. Arvios yotzos ri'ulos. Now, Arab women. Now, we're not talking about Arab women, as Rashi points out. We're talking about Jewish women who lived in Arabia. But you know when in Rome do like the Romans? So the Jewish women in Arabia, in the times of the Mishnah, would dress like the Arabian women, which means totally covered. Right? Like,
isn't there a prohibition against like helping other people
across them? Sehem lo selechu. Right? So that has to be an idolatrous practice. If it's just dress of the time, so then it's fine. Obviously, it's still got to be conformed to tznius, but in other words, no, the Jewish women lived in Arabia dressed like the Arabs, which was totally covered, like the burqas, right? Basically, yes, the burqas. And the women of Madai, they were dressed with the prufos. Now, I'll try to describe it, give it my best shot. Picture's worth a thousand words. It was a cloak where it folded over. And in other words, it covered the whole body, but it was like a robe or a cloak folding over, and it was forget it. Anyway,
it folded over the head.
Huh? Rashi, it doesn't sound like it went over the head, but nevertheless, though, in other words, it was a wrap. Thank you. It was a wrap where the end of the wrap tied secured onto the shoulder. Now, v'chol Adam. Now, the truth of the matter is that you don't have to live in Arabia to dress like the Arabian women, and you don't have to live in Madai to dress like the women of Madai. Ela shedibur chachamim behove. But you know that the chachamim understood how women dressed during the time, and they were just speaking about during the time. But if you want to dress in a burqa nowadays,
go right.
Gesundheit. Now, what can you use to secure the wrap? So you could use a stone, you could use a nut, you could use a coin, but you can't use it for the first time on Shabbos because of the issues of muktzah. Stay tuned, we'll talk about more of that later on. So first of all, let's go back to the first part of the Mishnah, Maitzinis. In the Mishnah we talked about tzinis, putting the coin on the wound, so bas ara. So the Gemara starts off by explaining that the wound is a bas ara. Rashi says, makashaya tachas pierces a rag of a kosher ba selarufu. It was a wound on the bottom of the foot, right? A corn, a bunion, who knows? Umaishna sela. So why would you put a coin on the wound? So the Gemara says, well, we'll make this a couple suggestions. So is it because it's hard? So the Gemara says, la chaspa. So put a piece of shard, earthenware shard on it. Well, maybe it's because the coin is going to give off a little bit of perspiration, a little bit of secretion off the coin, and that's good for the wound. So le'avilei tasa. So use a piece of metal. Well, maybe it's because there's a mold on the coin, and I don't know, I'm guessing, maybe because of the indentations within the minted coin, so that'll be beneficial to the wound. I'm suggesting, I don't know if I'm right. But anyway, li'avilei pulsa, so then use a mold made out of wood. Amar Abayi shmamina kula ma'alan lo. So Abayi says yes, yes, and yes. Meaning, if this were a multiple choice question, the answer would be D, all of the above. Meaning that it's metal, it secretes a little bit of water, it's minted, so it's got grooves within and indentations. All of it is the reason why you would want to put a coin on this particular wound.
Stanislaw says a comment from the Yerushalmi that it could suggest gout. And one of the treatments for gout some years ago was gold.
Oh, yeah?
A combination of gold.
Right. The coin, it's funny, it's interesting. The coin over here is a sella. A sella could be either gold or silver. So, right. All right, good. Avur de Shmuel, Abanis Yosef says Bechutin. Avur de Shmuel, Lo Shavik Luhu Labante, Danafke Bechutin, Lo Shavik Lele, Luhu Ganaim Gabe Hadade, the Avalu Mikvos, Biyomi Nisan, and Mafse Biyomi Tishrei. Shmuel did three things with his daughters. Three personal chumras, yeah, let's call them chumras, that he had with his daughters. Number one. He wouldn't allow his daughters to go out with strings on Shabbos, even though our Mishnah says that a young girl who has her ears pierced can have strings in her ears and walk out with it outside on Shabbos, and there's no issue of them taking it off. Shmuel says to his daughters, girls, you cannot do that. And the Gemara in just a moment will ask, well, if our Mishnah says it's okay, why would Shmuel would be personally machmir with his own daughters? Stay tuned, the Gemara will ask that. Number two, he did not allow his girls to sleep together in one bed. Gemara will discuss that as well. Number three, Shmuel made a mikvah for his daughters. If this sounds familiar to you, that's because in Nida, the end of Masechta Nida, we did this already once earlier, and it's really not that long ago, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. So, yes, you heard this recently in the Daf Yomi. And he would make mikvahs for his daughters. I'll explain the mikvahs better in just a moment, but the Gemara is going to go through these step by step. Number one, Lo Shavaglu Yotzes Bechutin. So, to be a daughter of Shmuel meant that all the other girls went out with strings in their ears, but because you're the daughter of Shmuel, you did not. Well, why?
Because
it's not colored. Oh, Gemara is going to say that. So why didn't Shmuel allow his girls to go out with strings in their ear? V'anan tanan habanos yotzos bechutin. Amisha says it's okay. So bante davu de Shmuel ditzivonim havu lo shavik luhu. So because Shmuel's daughter's strings were colored, and so he was worried that because they were colored, now they're fancy. And so now in the Rishus HaRabim, they're apt to take it off and show it off to their friends. So therefore, Shmuel felt that because you wear colored, so therefore you cannot wear it. Now, why can't the simple solution be?
Give
them the plain strings? I leave that for you to understand. Okay. So therefore, he did not allow that. Next. I'm sorry, right, thank you. Lo shavik luhu ganaim gabe hadade. He did not allow his daughters to sleep together in one bed. Now, perhaps this is going to be a support for Rav Huna, because I'm Rav Huna. Rav Huna teaches us Nashim hamisulalu zuvazu psulos lekahuna. Women who are engaged in terribly inappropriate behavior is that they basically sleep together. And they are disqualified from marrying a Kohen. Now Rashi says that they're prohibited from marrying a Kohen Gadol. Now we know that a Kohen Gadol has to marry a Besula. A Kohen Gadol is prohibited from marrying a Be'ula. Now when they sleep together, now obviously they're a very delicate issue, but there is no full penetration, and so they really didn't lose their Besula, but Rav Huna says it's enough. It's enough that makes them disqualified from marrying the Kohen Gadol. In fact, if you take a look at Rashi over here, so Rashi writes, the top of Samachem and Beis, the Kohen Gadol de Lohavya Besula Shlema. Rashi says that they are not pristine, they are not full Besulos, they lost a little bit of their Besula, not like I really understand what that means, but I'm just saying over the Rashi, and so therefore they cannot marry a Kohen Gadol. The Alpha Gav de Kohen Gadol B'yumei Lohavu. Now Rashi deals with a historical issue in that we're talking about Shmuel and his daughters, and we're talking about Rav Huna well after the Chorban Beis HaMikdash. You don't have a Kohen Gadol anymore. But Rashi understands this, and Rashi writes, Lohav Ahol V'derech Znus Chashiv Lei Lav Orech Ara. But what you see over here is that it's so inappropriate, this behavior. And it would had there been a Kohen Gadol, it would prohibit this woman to marry Kohen Gadol. So that's a telltale sign that this is really inappropriate behavior. And so therefore, what Shmuel was doing was basically saying to his daughters, look, I understand there's no Kohen Gadol, but still, the action over here of having girls sleep together in the same bed together because of Hamisulalo Zubazeh, it would apostate you to a Kohen. So that's a simon that this is really inappropriate behavior, and therefore he did not allow his daughters to do that. Now, obviously, it's very strange because essentially, just in the context of our Gemara, it's difficult to understand. Meaning Shmuel wouldn't allow his daughters to do it, but others would. Meaning it sounds like Shmuel over here was adopting a particular chumrah for his daughters, but this doesn't sound like a chumrah. This sounds like every father should. And right, and what Rav Huna wasn't talking about in the context of his own daughters, Rav Huna just simply was making a halachic statement in general, that if women behave this way, they're also to a Kohen Gadol. What the Gemara now is suggesting is that Shmuel, who is prohibiting his daughters to behave this way, was because of what Rav Huna said.
But wasn't it Shmuel's father?
I'm sorry, I keep saying Shmuel, it's Avua to Shmuel. You're right. Either way, it doesn't from the context of a Gemara, it doesn't sound like, it sounds like this is not because of any particular, it sounds like Avuah d'Shmuel was being more machmir. So the Gemara says no. Lo, savar ki, I'm sorry, psul sakuna lo. Savar ki hechad ola lufan gufe nuchra'a. The Gemara says no. It is not because, God forbid, the daughters of Avuah d'Shmuel were engaged in this type of behavior, women sleeping together. But rather, it's because he just didn't want them to get into the habit of having too much bodily contact with one another. Rashi explains that too much bodily contact will habituate them to want to be with another body, and therefore they're going to want to be with a man. It'll give him an extra...
Well, he's not addressing women, the rabbinical issue of lesbians.
No. It's an issue of that it'll habituate them to be with another body, and it'll give them an extra taiva to be with a man, and he did not want to do that. That's why he insisted that they all sleep on individual beds. And finally, number three. Avavalu mikvah b'yuma nisam, and he would make a mikvah for them in the months of Nisan. Now, let's explain this. We've just gone through this in Masechta Nida, but let's do it again. It's in the month of Nisan, so what are we talking about? Springtime. Springtime followed a long winter. What happens in the winter? It rains. Okay? I'm not talking about weather patterns here in Florida. It always rains. I'm talking about the weather patterns in the Mideast. And it rains in the winter, and it does not rain in the summer. If you have ever spent a significant amount of time in Eretz Yisrael, you know. In the summer, no rain. It's easy to be a weatherman in Israel. In the wintertime, hopefully there's rain. Right, and we pray for it. And we have a mesech to dedicate to the topic. It's called Tanis. Okay? And what ends up happening is that with the rain in the winter, so now what you're going to have is you're going to have snow-capped mountains. Snow-capped mountains, now the rain is going to fall off the mountains, and the rivers now are going to get fuller on account of the rain over the winter. So what Avuah d'Shmuel did for his daughters is that in the springtime, when he had all this rainwater, he made a specific mikvah for his daughters and did not allow them to tovel in the Euphrates River. Now, why not? Meaning, if it rains in Israel, how do we know this out here in Bavel? So Rav says, it's easy, look at the Euphrates River, because the Euphrates River is going to swell. Now, what I'm about to say may be geographically challenged, but so am I. So I'm geographically challenged. So, but what I'm doing, though, is I'm just saying over Rashi. So if you want to challenge my geography, by all means, please do so. But you're not just going to challenge me, you're going to challenge Rashi as well. So I'm in good company. But in other words, what happens is that when it rains out in Eretz Yisrael, now it could be, oh, we just had this whole week. Unfortunately, I've not been attending the geography, the historical geography of Eretz Yisrael, but when it rains up in North Israel, so that rain flows and it flows down the Euphrates, and so now what you're going to have is you're going to have a swell of the Euphrates River, which is generated by that rainwater. Now we have learned earlier, and we're going to say it again right now, in that rainwater, in order to make a kasha mikvah, has to be stationary. Natural spring water can be used as a kosher, I was going to say kosher mikvah, but that's not really a right way to say it. It will be matar a person, a woman or a man, even if it's moving, even if it's not stationary. So you want to go into a lake, into a river. So as long as that's natural spring water, right, water that comes from the earth, so that you can do even though the water is running. But if it's rainwater, rainwater by definition has to be stagnant and stationary. It cannot be moving. And so what Shmuel was worried about is that when you get to the springtime and the rain is in Israel and the rain comes off the mountaintops and now hits the Euphrates, now there's going to be more rainwater than the natural spring water. That the composition of the Euphrates will be more rain than spring and it's moving and it won't be a kosher mikvah. That is why Shmuel in the springtime made a special mikvah for his daughters. Now what did he do? So take a look at Rashi. Rashi goes on to describe in detail.
These daughters, they're married, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Another long discussion within Rashi. Perhaps it was because of Zava. Let's assume yes. Okay. Now, Shmuel made another statement which says that when you see the Euphrates River grow, it's self-generated. Right. It's not because of the rainwater, but simply because it's an increase in the natural spring water. But it has nothing to do with the extra rain. So what you have now is a debate between a statement made by Shmuel versus a statement made by Shmuel. Okay? And the Gemara just acknowledges that that's an issue. That if you want to use the Euphrates, you may do so, but only during the month of Tishrei. Tishrei is fall. Tishrei is after a long summer where there's been no rain. So now the Euphrates during the month of Tishrei is going to be strictly spring water with no added rainwater. That's when you could use the Euphrates River. So you see that Shmuel does in fact say in this last statement that during the rest of the year, specifically during the springtime, the Euphrates is a combination of both spring water and rainwater. So that statement to Shmuel collides with the previous statement of Shmuel, which is that the growth of the Euphrates is self-generated and it's not because of the rainwater. So, and the Gemara notes that there's a bunch of statements made by Shmuel, two made by Shmuel, one made by Avur de Shmuel. They're not all consistent with one another. And then the Gemara awkwardly leaves it off like that, meaning, okay, and there's an inconsistency in his statements. Let's finish off. I'd like to get to the Mishnah. Parefes al ha'evan v'amar gresha parefes amar abaye sefas alamat beya. Now, there's a skira within the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that a woman does fasten and secure her wrap. And then the Mishnah says, but don't do it on Shabbos. What? Meaning, so to that, the Gemara's resolution is that the last part of the Mishnah is talking about the matveh, it's talking about the coin, being that the coin is muksa. Now, isn't the stone muksa as well? Right? So, normally, yes. But if the stone is designated for the purpose of the wrap and the securing of the wrap, so then the stone would be fine. Well, wouldn't that also be true regarding the coin as well? Okay. What I'm raising is an issue. Can a woman on Shabbos take a nut and say, look, I need to transport this nut from point A to point B? No, I know I can't carry the nut, but here's what I'll do. I'll fasten the nut to my wrap, and I'll use it to secure my wrap. I'll wear the wrap to get to point B, and then I'll unsecure, and I'll give the nut over to my son. This is what's called ha'arama. Just a couple days ago, we were talking about ha'arama in a different context. Under certain circumstances, ha'arama is okay. Deception is fine. Legal loopholes, if you will. So, the Gemara wants to know, is ha'arama like what we just described acceptable?
Isn't that like the opposite of the Moshe Nomad Kevin?
And it really is also a malacha shein tzricha legufa. I'm just reading the Gemara and scratching the surface right now. Now, tibay lamandama marimim, tibay lamandama imarimim. Now, later on, again, we go back to the lake of the fire in the house. I told you so we're going to see it again this morning, and in the fire in the house. So you're allowed to save certain things from your house: kitzvei hakodesh and clothing. Now, you can't carry the clothing outside, but what you can do is you can wear clothing outside. Now, there's a debate later on whether or not you can put on layers of clothing. The house is on fire, you want to save your closet, so you'll put on one layer, another layer, another layer. So can you do that on Shabbos? Debatable. It's a machlokas, we'll see the machlokas later on. And essentially, the debate is, can I engage in the practice of harama? So the Gemara says, whatever your position is over there won't necessarily be true over here. Look, over there your house is on fire. If the Chachamim don't allow you this extra leniency of doing a little bit of deception,
put on the first suit, put on the second suit, put on the third suit, meaning the Chachamim understand human psychology. If we don't allow that, you're going to end up putting out the fire, and putting out the fire would be a malacha. So rather than violate a malacha, we'll allow you to put on the layers of clothing and stave in your wardrobe. Over here, however, right, your kid really needs the nut, meaning we understand that we don't need to give a special allowance to Eleanor to transport the nut from point A to point B by using it as a temporary fastener on your wrap. Or you can even argue like this. Even if over there, on the issue of saving your clothing out of the fire, if you subscribe to the position of, no, you cannot. You cannot put layers of clothing. So over there, derech hotzah bekach, meaning that's the normal way, that would be a normal way of people carrying. But over here, this is not normal. So maybe over here, you would be able to. So take what the Gemara leaves us off as unclear, unsure, in terms of whether or not a woman would be allowed to carry the nut from point A to point B by right now, quote unquote, pretending that it's a fastener. Okay, Ad Kan. Okay, so the issues that we covered over the course of today is Marasayan. Whether in private Marasayan is going to be an issue, Machlokas Tanayim, securing the wad in your ear and in your in your ear on your foot and sanitary napkins. We cover the issue of a false tooth. We cover the issue today of putting a coin on your wound on your foot and the chumers of Shmuel that he of Avud Shmuel that he had with his daughters and an explanation of those chumers. Tomorrow, a great discussion tomorrow. Tomorrow we talk about prosthetics. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos. Rabbi Chanan ben Yekash, Amar Rotsa Kash Baruch Hu, Zak Yisol, Levich Achim, and Tormitz Hashem, Amar Nech, Hafet Saman, Siko, Yagdil Tov, Yadir. Again, the Refuah Shleima for Binyamin Zev, Akoin, Ben Sharon, and Rivka.